Numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all from Bar Canada at the Day, downtown Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. It's all brought to you by DraftKings. Kelly Bidlin, ladies and gentlemen.
What's up,
back in
people?
The saddle. What do you call me?
So what's up, party people?
Party people. Oh, that's my line. What's up, party people? We got Drew Dinsick on the show. Talk NBA with us. Paul Carr on the Premier League. Jim Root on the Final Four. Paul Spore on baseball. You good, man? You good this morning?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm good.
How about that women's college basketball last night?
That was nuts. It's a good time.
First of all, let's start with the nightcap. Paige Beckers, 28-10-6-3-2. Points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks, leading UConn to the Final Four for, I believe, the 7,444th time in Geno Auriemma's
career. Sounds right.
Yeah. And they will take on, of course, Iowa behind Caitlin Clark's 41-12, 41 points, 12 assists, 41 points on the strength of 9 threes, 9 of 20 from behind the arc. From the unbelievable Caitlin Clark as Iowa takes down LSU yesterday. Congratulations to all who had that. And I'll just say it. Anytime she's involved, and this was the case last year where I couldn't wait to watch her play in the deep stretches of the all the way through the championship game of the tournament last year. Anything she's involved in, I think I speak for many and say, I'll watch it. Can't wait for the Friday Final Four game against UConn. And that'll be a tough game. Iowa, by the way, only favored in that game by 2.5 points. South Carolina, the undefeated Gamecocks behind Dawn Staley, 12-point favorites in the other semi against NC State. Those are on Friday. So I guess it should be said we could have, in both the men's and women's games, UConn-NC State finals, potentially, which would just be off the charts, unprecedented.
Yeah, it would.
That's a possibility. But I just thought it's just she's amazing. Because if you watch that game yesterday, talk about Caitlin Clark, obviously, it is clear that LSU as a team has more talent, top to bottom, than Iowa does. But by the strength of this one dynamic force on a basketball court who can hit it from the parking lot, Iowa just rolled them in the second half, and LSU didn't have any answers for them. It's amazing.
It's absurd. It's fun to watch. Like you're talking about, it's fun to watch her every single time she hits the court. When it's something that means something, though, yeah. Like it is becomes appointment television for me. We both watched it last night. I was watching it, audio up. NBA was on the side TVs for me last night. Like that was, it was great. I mean, the breakneck pace they were playing out of the
gate. The pace in the first half was unbelievable.
I don't know about you. I mean, as soon as Angel Reese, like, grabbed her ankle, I was like, live bedtime. But, like, then she came right back. She had a great game, too.
What I think is interesting, though, beyond betting is, I think we represent probably most male sports fans who have grown up loving sports, which is women's sports have not been necessarily the gravitational pull for us. Until this, quite frankly, which I like love watching in a way that I've never quite loved the WNBA, but maybe this is the generation that changes that as they grow older and get into the WNBA.
Caitlin Clark's still just special. Like,
she's special.
It's her.
It's her.
With all due respect to Paige Beckers and everybody else we're talking about, I tuned in for Caitlin Clark because she's one of the best shooters of the basketball I've ever seen, male or female.
I do want to make this one point, though, and I attribute it to Will Hill, who often makes good points, but I think made the best point about this, which is for all the talk about this and people can complain about ESPN over-promoting. Some people have a problem with that they push these sports to you. Obviously, there's things that happen off the court that swirl around race and gender, particularly when it comes to this LSU team and their head coach. Has her own swirling of things off the court. But I think Will's point is the best, which is take all of that stuff aside. We'll let others deal in that kind of realm. The issue is that until you get to criticize from a basketball standpoint in the same way that we do men's sports, it's never quite going to rise up to the level. So let's take an example of that last night. I was watching the game. And again, not the most astute women's college basketball observer because I haven't watched as much as others have. But it was very apparent to me, right? They pointed out at halftime, you know, LSU was going under the picks when Caitlin Clark was getting a pick
Yeah.
You know, to free her up. Obviously ridiculous. There didn't seem to be an adjustment to that. As I'm watching, I'm thinking the whole time on offense, I'm like, why isn't every possession going through Flauje? She is clearly the best player on the court, can do anything for LSU. And it just appeared like they were, we're going with Haley Van Lith as the starter for every possession. And I just thought that change should have happened too. And so Mulkey would get crushed today for that. I doubt she will. And then, you know, the Angel Reese thing is interesting. Yeah, she filled up a stat sheet. She went 17 and 20. She's had 78 career triple doubles in 3 years. I get it. She's great. Maybe it was the injury, but I thought she kind of stunk it up in the second half. Like, she's just throwing the ball up against the backboard. Her jump shot is very awkward. Mm-hmm. Like, there's things like that that if it were the men's side, we would be to open the show with that stuff. But people are still a little too reticent to do that, even though I just laid it out here on the show, right? But what I'm saying is, until we get to that point where it feels comfortable doing that, I think it's a great point about the difference between men's and women's sports.
Yeah, I hear you. And it's, I think there's still a lot of little things you could pick at, you know what I mean? But, just going back to Caitlin, she is incredible.
It's awesome.
I mean, no defender could handle her. Like, she picked up fouls. I mean, like, Lilith, whatever her name is. Like, I mean, she was at, like, three fouls immediately. She couldn't stay in front of her. It was incredible.
First thing, we should probably learn the names. That's probably the first thing we should whatever her name is.
I feel like she's been around for 6 years now, because she was on Louisville beforehand.
Well, by the way, I saw Doug Gottlieb making this point, but he's acting like he was the first. But I was actually texting with Danielle Alvari a couple days ago.
Oh, okay.
And she made the point that Haley Van she's the one. She's the KD of all of this. She was the best player at Louisville. They got to the Elite Eight last year, and then she went to play with LSU. And so there's a KD-like backlash to her playing for the Tigers, which I think is an interesting point that doesn't get made quite enough, right?
I'm going home now. Couldn't guard Caitlin. See ya.
Yeah. Well, by the way, this is the recipe for how Alabama beats UConn. And I'm not talking about one person like Caitlin Clark, but everybody on the team just hoist threes all game. Hoist threes and make as many as you can. We don't usually start a show with a tweet, but can I today? This is from Trip Tepper. Are we sensing a resurgence of Tankapalooza in the NBA? Raptors have lost 13 in a row. Jazz have tanked 9 in a row, and the Blazers have dropped 10 in a row. All right. Back in 2018, we did a thing here on a numbers game called Tankapalooza in the NBA. At that time, the worst team in the NBA, the team that finished with the worst record, would get 25% of the ping pong balls towards the NBA draft. 25% of the ping pong balls, you were the only team that got that high of a percentage of the ping pong balls, and therefore you had a higher percentage of chance to get the number one pick than any other team. Sure enough, that year, we identified that these teams were actively tanking to get the 25% of the ping pong balls and the worst record. What do I mean by that? We took a lot of incoming. Even Brent Musburger and I had a conversation off air. He was like, what are you talking about? They're tanking. These players aren't tanking. It's never the players. It's never the players on the court. But you had incidents towards the end of the 2018 NBA season where the Dallas Mavericks, if they were still involved in a tight game, mysteriously, Dirk Nowitzki and J.J. Barea would be taken off the court with 90 seconds left. Devin Booker had a mysterious hand injury that kept him out of game after game after game after game. The prize was DeAndre Ayton that year. And by the way, Phoenix was the best tankers of them all. They lost their last 27 games that year. Look it up. 0-27 against other teams that were in non-tanking mode. 0-27 down the stretch. They ended up with DeAndre Ayton. And while that may elicit a snicker from you, remember that the Suns actually got to the NBA Finals with DeAndre Ayton as a key cog in that wheel. And back in 2021, they lost to the Bucks. So the rules changed after that. Instead of 25% going to the worst team, they made it so 14% of the ping pong balls went to the worst three teams after that. And so while we looked to see if Tankapalooza existed the next year, we quickly realized that it didn't. By the way, if you're wondering how did we do, we estimated that we went back and looked at it. We ended up hitting over 30 Tankapalooza legs against one loss in Tankapalooza 2018. It was unbelievable. The only aberration was, I think, Dennis Schroeder. I want to say he was playing for the Hawks at the time. He didn't get the assignment. Like, one night, he scored, like, 40-something. We're like, what are you doing?
That sounds about
right. It's Tankapalooza. So the question, Trip, is a valid one. Does it exist? Here is the problem beyond the 14% of the ping pong balls with three teams. Kelly, what was that? What was that article you cited yesterday? What was the headline
from NBA Central? The article about how some of the most experienced front office people in the NBA this year believe that this could be the worst draft class they have ever seen in their years of working in the NBA.
Ever. So Victor Wembanyama, this just in, he got drafted last year. That was a thing. This year is the opposite of that. By the way, it was Banchero and Holmgren the year before that. Not only was it Wembanyama last year, but remember it was Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson. This year, here are, you know, just to give you an idea, the Ringer had Donovan Klingon going seventh, if you look at mock NBA drafts. ESPN has him going third. The Ringer had Shepard from Kentucky, Reed Shepard going first before the tournament. Now, after Kentucky got bounced, they have him going ninth. You know who the three top prizes are in this year's NBA draft? Any idea?
I know the star kid's in there somewhere. I don't know where.
Alexandre Sarr. Let's just call him Alex Sarr.
Who I believe is a Frenchman playing in Australia.
That's correct. Another French prospect by the name of Zachary Richaché.
Yeah, he's been up there too. Yeah, I'm looking at him right now on top of a mock.
And a Serbian guard by the name of, are you ready for this for more confusion?
Nikola
Topic. So enjoy that. By the way, there's also the Spurs polluting this. If they end up getting the number one pick, because they'll still be in the lottery, they'll draft differently having Wembanyama than any other team will. So it's not clear who's the best or who will be first and who you'll end up drafting second or third. It's not worth tanking. So from a betting standpoint, no, not doing it.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with a free VSiN daily newsletter. In today's newsletter,
Bill chats with Brent Musburger and some women's college basketball opening line splits. How about UConn and Iowa? 95% of the initial handle on Iowa.
No surprise there. Bill's Late Night is your morning, Kelly. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin. Drew Dinsick about to join us. I just want to finish the thought because the commercial rudely interrupted
us.
Rudely.
By the way, Books had to get killed on that game last night, right?
Oh, she hit every prop.
Like, I mean, every prop went over.
Everything. Everything.
What were the? I'll check the splits on that. That'd be like 98% of the handle was on the over on that.
Oh, she had every prop you can imagine. Dream up a prop, she went over. Just wanted to finish again, in case you missed it. Trip Tepper was asking about, you know, the fact that these three teams in particular, the Raptors have lost 13 in a row, the Jazz have tanked, he uses the word tanked 9 in a row, and the Blazers have dropped 10 in a row. And I was just giving the dissertation beforehand about how we used to exploit this kind of thing, you know, it's hard to believe, 6 years ago. And by the way, if you have Moneyline parlayed against those teams, mazel tov to you. Good for you. But but the question is it a thing that I would recommend doing? And it's not because of the nature of what we just described. There is no specific prize. There is no franchise, you know, clear franchise generational player like Wembanyama. Although, again, the three foreign prospects I just outlined might end up being that. Nikola Topic, by the way, yeah. Kelly. So, no, I am not going to sit here and say, hey, this is a thing that we should do on a nightly basis because it just doesn't, to use the Gene Steratore line, it doesn't rise to the level of a bet.
Yeah, I think there are certain teams that you can definitely pick on this time of year, but I think that's the case every year, no matter what the draft class looks like. You've got a lot of teams that have waved the white flag. Some of them done it a month. You know, it feels like the Raptors kind of did that about 3-4 weeks ago at this point. You know, we talk about the Spurs off the air. The Spurs, I think this is maybe the perfect example of a team that, like, to answer the Tepper question, they're waving the white flag with putting Vassell and Sohan basically out for the rest of the year, but they're going to keep throwing Wemby out there and let him do his thing. So do you want to try to get in front of Wemby every single night? It's not really something I'm looking to do.
We also have to make the distinction between tanking and just being bad at basketball.
Right.
Some teams are just bad at basketball. And teams that are bad at basketball might have a good night every once in a while. So it's not the same dynamic, I guess, to wrap it up. Drew Dinsick does join us. He's the host of Not One But Two podcast, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor. Andy Molitor with a great Kim Mulkey tweet yesterday where he said, hear me out. It's just so great. And then NBC Sports bet the edge, which, of course, he does with Jay Croucher. Whale underscore cappers where you can find him on Twitter. It's Drew Dinsick, everybody. How you doing, Drew?
I'm doing well. Yeah. Interesting. It is interesting to try to kind of handicap motivations this time of year in the NBA. You know, I think Kelly kind of hit the nail on the head with in general, you know, but specifically with the Raptors. The Raptors were de-incentivized to win because if they did not finish in the top seven, they give their first round pick to the San Antonio Spurs next year. So, you know, really no good way for them to team build unless they were losing, which is kind of why I think in general they pulled the rug. All that said, I bet the Raptors tonight.
Yeah,
I think 12.5 points is an awful lot. Market seems pretty convinced you're going to get both, you know, full effort from LeBron and AD in this one. And, you know, for what it's worth, the Raptors have kind of secured their future from what what I can tell. And I don't think, you know, now that they're bringing Quickly in general, some of the players who were given extra time to get right, they're bringing them back into the fold. I think you're going to see a little bit more of an honest effort out of these guys coming down the stretch here. No Scotty Barnes, of course, but RJ Barrett and Quickly likely to play tonight.
Yeah, that does, by the way, that does is worth repeating that while I was focused on tanking to get the number one pick, yes, if a team has a stipulation from a previous trade that would toggle their pick to another team, that's obviously something to know. And in the case of the Raptors, despite Drew taking the points, that is something to know. By the way, Drew comes to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Any other NBA plays tonight?
Yeah, there's two high leverage games that I took side on. The first is the Clippers. I laid the two against the Kings. The Kings are in a really, really, really rough spot. Not from a rest standpoint. In fact, this is a pretty balanced Kings small rest advantage tonight. But I don't think that matters as much as not having Kevin Huerter or Malik Monk available. Two pretty important parts of their spacing overall. That's kind of how the Kings have lived and died this entire successful run that they've had with Sabonis and Fox is kind of the engines. But the supporting cast and the shooting in particular has been huge for them. Now you got to take on a Clippers team that has at least is playing, giving you much more honest effort lately. They steal one against Philly. They give you a very honest effort over the weekend. It does look like they are trying to kind of find some sort of pre-playoff form, whereas most of the month of March, the Clippers were kind of what exactly is happening here? Are you guys just going to be a very unserious team? And I think they've answered the question that this is kind of playoff tune-up time, and that's bad news for the Kings, who are kind of in a nasty spot in terms of player availability. So I laid the two with the Clippers. My fare on that one is 3.5. The other one that I can't really make sense of is Mavericks Warriors. People have been watching the Mavericks, right? Like, did they know what's happening? Like, the Mavericks are like legitimately excellent right now, and the Warriors are coming into this game they've had a very nice successful stretch here, beating up on some of the dregs in the East Coast, but this is a tough contest, and I don't know exactly how Golden State gets this small advantage here. Yeah, I can't make sense of this one. I think this one should be wrong team favorite here. Yeah, Mavericks should be small favorites.
I'm in on that Dallas side tonight with you too, Drew. I thought that would still surprise me. It's hanging at a dog price. I'm with you. I thought it was going to be a couple points the other way.
As you say that, Drew, as you're saying that, I see the the cartoon thought bubble over your head saying, I can't believe I'm betting against Steph again. I can't believe I'm doing this.
Dude, Steph's picked my pocket quite a lot in the last several years. He did it again last week with the Magic against the Warriors. And, the Magic, March overall was I just took a massive haircut.
I don't know if you know this, Drew. He's the Caitlin Clark of the NBA. He's the Caitlin Clark of the MNBA.
Scott, about that Magic game. That was my biggest NBA bet of the past probably month or something. That was gross.
And Curry like basically, you know, Draymond gets ejected early. You're like, all right, let's bury these guys. And Magic just played with their food for 3.5 quarters. Finally, give you an honest effort, and then Curry just knife right in the chest, right at the close there to make that one in the books for the Warriors. But I mean, I know it's tough. It's tough for me to rate the Warriors as a serious team. And I think the way that Dallas is playing right now is pretty special.
Yeah, that was the night where the Warriors were on a back-to-back after a game in Miami. They were in Orlando. And then, of course, Andrew Wiggins stepped up, and then Curry put him to sleep, literally, with the napping thing that he does. Let me ask you this here. I asked you this right after we got back from vacation after the Super Bowl. And I asked this of Jay Kahn as it pertained to the NHL postseason yesterday. So I'll ask it of you here, because I love that you have numbers for this. What is the potential matchup in either the East or the West that you are actually hoping happens because you know that the series price is going to be off and you can't wait to exploit it?
Yeah, we may have talked about this, but it's definitely Thunder Suns. If we get that one, that one's going to be the one I'm excited to bet.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah. I'll tell you this, though. As you look at the current playoff field, I still don't really rate anyone in the East as, you know, realistically taking more than two games off the Celtics. So I think the East is a little bit boring this year, but the West is the opposite. You have potential for some absolutely fantastic matchups here in the West. And the way it's set up right now is probably going to be a balanced draw. But there is a world where Minnesota gets the one. OKC is the two. Denver's the three. It, by the way, you know, if those teams all finish with the same number of wins, Denver is the three. I think OKC has the tiebreak if it's a three-way tiebreak. But the tiebreak rules are absolutely bananas. All I know is that Denver's on the wrong end of the tiebreak for both OKC and Minnesota right now. But that said, if you get OKC and Denver in the 2-3, and you get, say, Dallas and Phoenix in the 6-7, you have potentially massive, massive lopsided strength on, you know, the two. 2-7s and 3-6 compared to, you know, 1-8 and 4-5, and that would make things pretty interesting in terms of just taking a shot on, you know, I feel like maybe the Clippers even coming back around on them if they can find anything. But to me at least, if the you know, whoever can avoid Denver really in the West is in really strong shape. And if the Mavericks draw Denver in the West, then I think you are going to start asking some serious questions about if the Nuggets price is right, because plus 125 feels pretty favorable in terms of expecting the Nuggets coming out of this very, very competitive West.
All right, we're coming back more with Drew Dinsick. I'm going to ask you to clarify what you just said on the other side, because there are going to be some folks who missed exactly what you were getting at right there. And then Drew is admitting he didn't have the greatest March ever betting. This might be a good sort of thing for all bettors to listen to. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
For a limited time, we're offering 2 weeks of our exclusive betting splits for free. Just sign up at VSiN.com/splits. The VSiN betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes. You can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets and where the money does not match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Take advantage of this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/splits.
Betting splits. Split bets.
Oh, for God's sakes, where'd you go? Now to claim your free 2 week access to VSiN's betting splits. Don't strike out on potential winnings. Visit VSiN.com/splits and start making smarter baseball bets today. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin live from Barcanada, the Barrage here at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper, host of the Deep Dive podcast and NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast, rejoin us. Drew, can you clarify what you were getting at? It might have been lost on some folks here on the other side.
Oh, yeah.
Courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Go ahead.
Yeah, if you're getting involved in the futures market, you better have a good reason to take the price in that pool relative to just rolling over series prices or just rolling over game prices if you think there's a huge, you know, opportunity. We could talk about that with the respect to the Sixers and Embiid potentially, but you know, the imbalance potentially in the West is worth paying attention to, because you know, if the path for the Nuggets is you got to beat the Mavs, then you got to beat the Thunder, then you got to beat whoever emerges on the other side, Clippers, Wolves, you know, Lakers, Warriors, who knows, those three prices. I have very, very tough time thinking that those series prices are going to be anyway math compatible with the Denver Nuggets currently at plus 125 right now to win the West. So basically the market is telling you that they have high confidence that the Nuggets are going to get the easier side of the draw. And that might not happen because they don't hold the tie breaks and things are a little bit out of their, out of their power right now. And, there's more poles you can poke with the Nuggets. I mean, I know they have the Spurs tonight and they're, 15, 16 point favorites. But the health and situation around Jamal Murray is somewhat unclear. Not obvious that he's going to be available for the game on Thursday against the Clippers, which is going to be a pretty high leverage game for both teams. And yes, their schedule is somewhat easier than Oklahoma City's down the home stretch, but they have an equal number of very winnable games and just a couple of coin flips. And so it's not clear to me that this likelihood that Denver's going to skate to the one seed is all that likely. And if they don't, then plus 125 for them to win the West is just a flat out wrong price.
All right. That makes sense. Love that. Thanks for the clarification. Let's go back to what you and I and Kelly, we were speaking about before you even came on air. And I'm not trying to in any way say, oh, look, Drew had this terrible month. But I think it's a great thing for newish bettors to hear from someone like you that none of us are impervious to the bad stretch. And so you had a really bad March.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Overall, took almost a 12% haircut in the month of March, which is the worst month I've had betting going back to, I think, the fall of 2021. So it was hellaciously poor. And it's especially funny because every year when football ends, I say the same thing on every platform, which is that, don't go and donk all your NFL winnings on college basketball because you're betting into a mature market that you don't really have much experience betting into. And I broke my own rules this year, getting involved in a couple high stakes March Madness pools. And usually, if you're in a high stakes pool, you kind of know like, hey, everybody's going to, you're betting against the pool, not like you have better fares than everybody else. You kind of know all the fares are pretty, the pool probabilities are solved if it's a high stakes pool and you're basically just hoping to run good. And I ran very poorly. I think almost every big bet I had was out in round one. And so I was basically backstopping with the liquidity in the pool. That hurts. And to compound things, I have made some aggressive bets in Miami, particularly on the women's side in the outright market, thinking that there was, a huge plus EV play to be made on Rybakina after Iga went down. And turns out not the case at all. And in fact, if I had just gone match by match with Rybakina, I would have done better than the bet I made on the outright. So, yeah, a little mini tilt for me in the month of March and, kind of reinforcing a lesson that I already knew. But you have to learn it again sometimes. And that's just that, yeah. Stake down and, kind of pick your spots appropriately. And yeah, I was a victim of not really listening to my own advice this month.
It's a PSA for all. It happens to all of us. And anybody who tells you it doesn't happen to them, they either haven't bet enough or are lying. One or the other. Simple. I mean, nothing is a straight graph upwards. It just isn't. Okay, by the way, about that Rybakina performance in the finals against Danielle freaking Collins. By the way, tip of the cap to Danielle Collins for having the biggest win in her career after announcing that this would be her last year on tour. So good on her. She says she's not reconsidering. Were you surprised by that Rybakina performance where it just felt like every time she had an opportunity to shift that match, she just would, hit it to the grandstand almost? Felt like.
I was surprised by her quarterfinal performance. I was surprised by her semifinal performance. And I was very surprised that she was unable to take any of the opportunities afforded to her in that final, particularly in the first set. She could have wrestled control of that one early and she just let Collins hang around and hang around and hang around and then gifted it to her at the death there. So, Rybakina, it felt like was not necessarily engaged and like didn't have the same urgency, even on the same planet of urgency that Danielle Collins was playing with in that entire tournament. She spent too much time on court in the quarterfinals and semifinals. Like there was no excuse to drop the second set to Zachary. There was no excuse to just completely mail in the second set to Vika, and then couldn't serve it out against Vika, which was kind of a red flag. Mm-hmm. I should take it a little bit more seriously before the final. But I still was kind of like, yeah, you know, maybe she'll play like she played in the Brisbane final against Sabalenka, you know, and she just flipped the switch. No, she didn't. No. I mean, I think ultimately, like, is it better for the sport of tennis that Danielle Collins got the win? Yes. That was huge, 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 not just for, you know, women's tennis as a story, but, you know, U.S. women's tennis. And then just in general, setting up Collins with an opportunity to play in the Olympics is going to be huge. You know, Collins's serve was so freaking electric when she was getting her first serves, and she's going to be a problem in the Grand Slams, I think, the rest of the way.
So we have a few minutes here. So give us the sense. Obviously, you're betting NBA. You're looking forward to the postseason. You'll bet series prices. You'll have your futures plays. Beyond the NBA, what are you? Are you betting the Masters? Do you have Masters bets? Are you already in Olympics handicapping mode? Because I know that's big for you. Like, what is the Drew Dinsick pie of bets right now?
There's no betting to be had on the draft or the Olympics right now, but I'm paying very close attention to both, waiting for opportunities. NCAAs and swimming has just, you know, basically wrapped up, and the men's and women's, there was a lot of important takeaways to help understand what the U.S. team is going to be like for the Olympics and the swimming side of things. In the draft, we're ultimately right now, the shape is kind of being, or, you know, the space is kind of being shaped with the information that's out there, but there's no real high liquidity markets to bet into. So you just kind of got to be patient.
Do you feel like that's different from other years? Do you feel like it?
Not at all. No. Okay. This has been trending in this direction for a couple of years now. If you do get a hot nugget, you honestly just need to find ways into the legal markets to sit on it until the bigger liquidity becomes available. If you're wondering why didn't that move at DraftKings because of the news it's out? Well, somebody's sitting on it, trying to keep it from, you know, turning into a runaway until there's a bigger bite at the apple. It's mostly NBA, you know, sharpening up handicap for the playoff series bet. Series by series betting is huge for me. Clay season for tennis. I mean, this is a huge, huge opportunity on the tennis calendar between now and the French Open. The ramp up is just, it's extremely fun. Awesome tournaments, awesome locations all across, you know, most beautiful parts of Europe and Houston. It's a very, very, very fun time to be betting tennis.
That's for sure.
Hey, Drew, we're gonna break down the most improved six man race in a little bit. Hey, who's on Dinsick ballot right now? If you had to turn it in today, who's most improved player? Who's sixth man of the year?
So most improved is a very easy answer for me personally, and it's Jalen Williams of Oklahoma City. Like his specific, you know, step forward has been so obvious and so impactful to Oklahoma City being as good as they are. He would be my obvious vote. I think Coby White's probably going to win, though. I think ultimately, you know, the campaigning that the Bulls are going to do right now, that's going to take hold. Tyrese Maxey and really just the sourness around the Sixers is going to keep him from getting, you know, he may not get balloted. So I think White's probably going to be on most ballots and at the top of a lot of ballots, and that's probably going to be enough. Sixth man of the year is much tougher. Malik Monk really had it in the bag until the injury, and he's not going to play again. And while that doesn't disqualify him, you're going to need to see something special from Naz Reid, but he's doing it as a starter. So I honestly have zero clue how that one's going to go, but my vote would probably go to Naz Reid right now.
Jalen Williams, it should be pointed out, here on April 2nd, is 50-1. 50-1 to win most improved.
Yeah.
Montesano did a whole thing on text yesterday, which we'll get into when we talk.
I love it too.
Drew, appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Best of luck, man.
Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper for all that he does. Paul Carr with his Premier League plays on the other side. It's a numbers game. Visa, the Sports Betting Network. Numbers game, live from Bar Canada at the D. There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Do not wait. Download the app now. Use code ANG when you sign up. and earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager now. Faked you out that time, didn't
Yeah, you did. You did.
See what I did? A little pretty.
You were like Steph Curry with like a fake alley-oop, and it just went in. You know what I mean?
Sorry about that.
I'm like hanging up here now.
Sorry, I hit that three. We get tweets at Beanie the Book. I just want to read these two. Here it goes. Hoops by Hoots. If you don't know if you didn't know that Nikola Topic was a real person, you would think it's a bad cover identity for Jokic. Maybe producer number 10 Kelly Fidlin can give us insight on him.
Yeah, I mean, you would know. You would have said that last year about Jovic. Now we're on number three.
Nikola Jokic to Nikola Jovic. We had that problem, and now we have Nikola Topic. Yeah. Get ready for the NBA draft. The NFL's very marginally bettable cousin.
The best we could talk to Zach about this on Thursday, because he's written up probably bios on all of these guys. Yeah. Like, he knows all these guys.
Oh, yeah. He's all about Alexandre Star. What's his name?
I was going to say, the reason I know him best, Gil, is because I read one of Zach's pieces on him.
Zachary Richache is the other guy. Primetime. I'm sorry. Both Gil and Kelly are now being sued by Kim Mulkey for their woke hit job on her coaching performance last night, as well as their lack of love for the players. Sad. Disgraceful. There it is. We're getting sued. Oh, man. Paul Carr, ladies and gentlemen, he was kind enough to join us last week under the most sort of heavy-hearted circumstances. He joins us now again from the Progressive Guest Line, or courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Not sure where he is right now. I think he's in Miami. It's Paul Carr, everybody. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well, Gil. Yes, I'm in Miami, my dad's homeland. Happy coincidence that I get to come down here for company meetings, you know, a couple weeks after my dad passed. But good to see some of his favorite places and people down here.
Yeah, that's nice. For those who missed it, Paul's father passed away last week, and he still came on and gave us picks. By the way, you hit that draw also, so people were very pumped about that. But you said you're in for meetings, you're in for your job, but you're also like going to visit some of his favorite places. That's really nice.
Yeah, just trying to, you know, drive by the house he grew up in, hoping to get to the beach. I'm not sure I'm going to make his favorite beach, but yeah, just say a little tribute to him while I'm down here.
Okay, so we have, again, for those who missed it, at the top of the Premier League standings, we have a logjam: Liverpool, Arsenal, and Man City.
Yeah.
And so we just had a draw between Arsenal and Man City, which you called, correct? All right.
Yep. So should have thrown out the under too, because I thought it'd be low scoring, but I didn't end up playing it.
Yeah. So right now, with 9 games left, and this after Liverpool winning, right? Liverpool has a 2-point lead over Arsenal and a 3-point lead over Man City. Where does this all stand to you?
Yeah, I mean, the big winner in the City Arsenal game was Liverpool, essentially, because they now have 2-point lead on Arsenal, 3-point lead on City. Liverpool also has the easiest schedule. They're going to be favored at every game the rest of the way, but maybe Aston Villa in the next last game of the season on the road. And Arsenal and City don't have super hard games left, but Arsenal still has to play Tottenham and Villa and Chelsea and Man United for what that's worth. So, Liverpool's your favorite. City, again, we talked about this a week or two ago. The asterisk is still injuries with them. You know, Stones and Walker didn't play. If they don't come back, you know, City's depth is not what it has been. And if you told me City was going to be healthy the rest of the way, I would jump on City at like plus 190 to win the title. I still think they have the highest ceiling of any team. But injuries just have a lot of question marks around that City team the rest of the way here.
Let me ask you one macro question before we get into your picks. And you have a pick Tuesday, today, tomorrow, and Thursday in the Prem. Goal scoring environment, as we used to say in baseball, the scoring environment, is such that we're getting a lot more scoring this year. Any rhyme or reason to that, in your opinion?
I think it's a whole bunch of little things. Ryan O'Hanlon had a good piece on ESPN.com last week, kind of walking through some of these that I'm on the same page with. So just for the context, there's about 10 more goals per team this season.
Wow.
We're on pace for that. So about 200 more goals over the course of a season. Some of the reasons: there's been a little more stoppage time, you know, 3 or 4 more minutes of stoppage time on average per game, which doesn't sound like a ton, but that's also historically when goals are often scored the most, just because there's a sense of either desperation because teams are pushing hard, or, you know, it's the end of the game, who cares? So that's part of it. Penalties are up a little bit. Just more penalties being called because of the video review and such. That's a small factor. And the biggest thing, I think, is just a continuing trend over the last 15 years that teams take better shots. As a proxy for this, about 15 years ago, about 53% of shots in the Premier League were from inside the penalty area. And this season, we're at 67%. And that's just, it's kind of the, you know, is it analytics? Is it, you know, coaches wising up? It's some combo of the two, but just like, you know, it's layups and threes in the NBA and the passing game improves in the NFL and homers and strikeouts in baseball. This is kind of the soccer version of that. Just not taking as many long shots as they used to, which means better shots, which means more goals.
Wow. From what percentage to 67%, did you say?
53% 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And now it's 67%.
That's significant. The 10 more goals per team, though, that thing is...
Like, you look at almost any league, the numbers are similar.
Well, you're breaking up there, Paul. Say again.
One every three games or so. No, I'd say, yeah, an extra goal every three games, that adds up a lot over the course.
That's amazing. The stoppage time, too, like, I just think from our American sensibilities, we talked about this, whenever there's a World Cup or a Euro Cup, everything we tend to lock in on soccer when we're, you know, as an American sports fan base. Mm-hmm. I'm always amused by stoppage time, right? Like the nebulous nature of that, where they're just like, nine, you know, and you're just like, what? 9 minutes? Mm-hmm. How would this differ from that game a second ago where it was 3 minutes? It seemed like the same amount of stoppage time. So that's always fascinating. And I guess you're right that I never thought of it that way, that a preponderance of goals gets, not preponderance, but a weighted amount of goals gets scored in that because of the reasons you stated. All right, let's get to your plays. What do you got today?
All right, we're going to Nottingham Forest to win today against Fulham. Fulham's 12th in the table. Forest is down at 17th, and Fulham's 17 points ahead. But Forest lost some points for violating financial rules, like everybody seems to have this season. Underlying numbers are just a lot closer. And Forest is also obviously a little more desperate. You know, we're approaching the motivation time of the year. Drew talked about it with the NBA. Same thing here. Forest is trying to stay out of relegation. Chris Wood stepped up, scored a couple straight games for them. And Fulham's defense just hasn't been good all season for the most part. Third best shots allowed, fifth most expected goals against. So getting plus 155 on a team that's not a whole lot worse at home, I like here on the Forest win today.
All right. And speaking of Arsenal, they play tomorrow. You have a play in that game.
Kind of a squarish type of play, but Arsenal win to nil. I like it minus 130 at home against Luton Town. Some places you might need to parlay a win with both teams to score no, but you should be able to get minus 130 or so. Look, Arsenal is the best defense in Europe. They have fewest goals against, fewest expected goals, both well under one per game, and Luton doesn't score a whole lot. Fourth fewest expected goals. Arsenal has 11 shutout win outs this season, so this is...
I think
your brain dead pick 30 against a bad team at home.
All right, Paul. And Thursday, real quick, your last one.
Chelsea win versus Manchester United. United's ahead in the table, but underlying numbers all belong to Chelsea. They've been pretty good lately, at least two goals in five of their last six games. And the underlying numbers.
All right. Paul, our connection is a little, how do the kids call it? Janky. And so we're going to move on here. But again, our most heartfelt condolences on the passing of your father. Let me just review what Paul's bets were. Tuesday, today, he has Nottingham Forest with a win. He got him plus 155 against Fulham. Always shop around, try to get the best number there. So he's got Nottingham Forest today. Tomorrow, he has Arsenal win to nil versus Luton Town. And then Thursday, he's got Chelsea beating Man U. He's got Chelsea at plus 105. So no totals from Paul, which is a strange anomaly. Usually we have a total. So those are his three plays as he comes to us very kindly, pardon me, from Miami. Real quick, tennis, again, VSiN.com/picks. They're there for all subscribers. Every host, every guest on this network, every play they have in every sport is at VSiN.com/picks if you are a subscriber. And as I mentioned yesterday, that now that the tennis tour is on clay, only one of the tournaments this week, for instance, is in the United States. Actually, that's not true. One on the men's side, one on the women's side. The men in Houston, the women in Charleston, South Carolina, where they're playing on hard true. Have you ever played tennis on hard true? It's a hybrid.
No, what does that mean?
So it's like the...
I mean, like maybe, and I just don't know.
I was just playing in Florida on hard true when I was in Miami.
Is it like those softer hard courts?
Well, it's not red clay slow, but it's like a hybrid. It's from a quarry in Charlottesville, Virginia, home of UVA, where they produce this surface, this hybrid material
okay.
that drains beautifully as a tennis surface also. So the, so what happens is the ladies tour, they like playing in Charleston because it's a nice segue from hard courts to a somewhat slower surface, and then they go to the red clay, which is super slow in Europe. Anyway, getting the point, the one pick that I had, the match has already started and it got suspended after three games. We're down a break, by the way, on Federico Correa, but that was the play. Beeson.com/picks for all subscribers. College Hoops with Jim Root from Three Man Weave next. Numbers Game, Beeson, the Sports Betting Network.